minutes, 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, condescending liberals with high expectations. Good morning to you. Good morning, conservatives out there in the audience. Good morning, Mark Riley. How are you, my friend?
Good morning, Mark Maron.
God, it seems like an eternity since I've seen you people. Kalo, how you doing? You all right? Yeah, God forbid you put the mic in front of your face like I'm not going to say hi to you on Monday. Come on. No, it's all right.
Sorry,
I know. You're busy. You got other shows to do and everything. It's already been a long day for you. I understand that.
Yes, I am a little busy, but I'm very sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, man.
How are you?
I don't know how I am. It's Monday, and I'm already in trouble. It's Monday, and I've got, like, Friday. Well, not even Friday. I've got Wednesday ahead or something. I'm full of seething. I'm hostile, you know, and I got to get over it. This whole Justice Sunday thing made me disgusted. You know, we've got some sound we're going to play of Bill Frist and of James Dobson later. It just made me disgusted. And I'm trying, you know, I had a pretty good weekend. My wife came back into town. And, Riley, we missed you at the big year anniversary party.
I couldn't make it on Friday night, but I was there in spirit.
Wayne Gelman came.
I heard. And he's not even here this morning.
I know. And you weren't there. There's about 20 people down there at the beer garden in Astoria. It was a nice time.
You all had fun?
We had a great time. And me and Larson and his wife Jennifer went across the street beforehand to get some Greek seafood at the seafood restaurant. Let me tell you something, Caleb. Soft shell crabs in season.
Uh-oh.
I'm dying.
You don't eat soft shell crabs, do you, Ryan?
I eat crab cakes. Only crab cakes.
Oh, my God. You're limiting yourself. We got to open it up. Soft shell crabs.
Too complicated.
What do you mean too complicated?
Too complicated.
What do you mean? They got legs and things?
Yeah, you know, all of that stuff. I'm not sucking stuff out of you out of crab legs.
That's
that.
The thing about soft shell. You can eat the whole thing.
I know. My wife, my wife is a big crab eater. She likes the whole, you know, the whole thing.
The soft ones, you just eat the whole thing. Once you cross over the line, you're like, it's not a crab. It's nice. It's crispy stuff. You know, it's not. You don't think of it as
the skin of a chicken.
Kinda.
It's delicious.
It's unbelievable. And they're in season. They're in season for like twice. What are they like? It's like 2 months a year. This is the important topics. These are the important issues today on Monday, along with Justice Sunday, John Bolton, terrorism, Iraq. We're going to talk to Susan Jacoby later in the show, the author of Free Thinkers, who's going to tell us about the historical precedents of church and state separation and just how fragile the American democracy can be if it is not maintained diligently by the people who are operating it, not Bill Frist.
Well, you know, all we have to do is look around us, and we realize how fragile our democracy is between Justice Sunday and you know, the nomination of what appears to be a complete wacko. But we're going to get into that, because I have a question that I'd like to put to people in the audience, because I find it incredible that this man's name is still being preferred to represent this country in front of the biggest body in the world, the United Nations.
Well, it's just, I think it goes along the lines of what we were talking about before, of America's drift towards not just a sort of religious totalitarianism, but sort of a fascistic impulse within the neocon death cult itself. That, you know, you have an administration that is a torture apologist, that, you know, is completely dishonest with the American people, that is willing to blame the underlings in any sort of military, judicial hearing. I mean, they don't care. You know, all they want is a show of force, and this guy is that face. This guy is a show of American force in the United Nations, and that's what they want. He is another neocon fascist, you know, death cult dude that they want to put in with their ideology.
Well, and the thing that troubles me, Mark, is that it's happening now and starting to show its face on the domestic front. We're seeing a wholesale assault on seniors. Again, a story we're going to get into a little bit later about how they're going to end up closing down these offices that hear Medicare appeals.
Adapt or die.
It is. I mean, it is across the board. It is across the spectrum with these people. They are assaulting America on a lot of different fronts in the name of being American. It's the most incredible thing I've ever seen.
And the baffling thing about it is that, you know, whether Karl Rove knows about it or not, which I'm sure he does, is that the schism that they're placing within, you know, the populace with this religious, these cultural issues, especially this, you know, the judicial issue, the issue of these, you know, this extremist, these religious extremists trying to usurp the judiciary, is that it's a distraction from what you're saying, the nuts and bolts of doing something like they did with Medicare, which is limit the places where people can go to be assessed as to whether they need Medicare or not.
Yeah.
So a ridiculous number. And we will talk about that, you know, in a few minutes. But with all this nonsense going on with this religious right, with these extremists, with these anti-constitutional, anti-American extremists that are taking up way too much airtime, and I give them airtime because I think they're a threat, but I start to realize that stuff that's really affecting real Americans, just working people who aren't necessarily religious fanatics, who aren't, you know, worrying every day whether or not, you know, the rapture is coming. All that stuff is being obfuscated by this crap.
Oh, you mean the people who are making the $5.15 an hour, the people who are struggling every day to make sure they have whatever kind of money they need to get put gas in their car or to get on the train or get on the bus. But you know, Mark, there's something that was buried in one
of the... You can't fill your car with gas. You can't fill your car with God, is what I'm saying.
No, you can't fill your car with God. And, you know, Bush and Cheney are supposed to be meeting with Abdullah of Saudi Arabia today. I guarantee you lower gas prices will not come out of that meeting.
The God of oil.
Yeah, anyway. The God of oil will be... But, see, there was something buried in one of the stories that we've been looking at this morning that mm-hmm. really struck me like a ton of bricks. Ken Melman, you remember him?
Sure.
You remember Bush's, you know, big operative?
The Republican guy.
Yeah, he now heads the Republican National Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Ken Melman holds weekly skull sessions with representatives of the Family Research Council, Focus on the Family, all of these different conservative religious right organizations that the Bush administration on the one hand tries to act like, well, you know, we're not completely down with their agenda. But here is Ken Melman, and believe me, Melman would not hold these kinds of strategy sessions without a green light from the White House. He is the head of the Republican National Committee. He is not going to get off Bush's reservation. So here you have some people in the Bush administration trying to put some distance between them and the wackiest of the religious right, while his operative meets with them every week.
Yeah, I think I had that feeling today just instinctually when I was listening to some of the sound we had of James Dobson, was that they are completely on board with what is going
on,
with Frist going down there, with everything else. This is the way they're shoring up their sort of ignorant base and guaranteeing that they're it's not even hedging their bets. They know the numbers that are available there, and the one thing they want to make sure they don't lose are the numbers of these religious fanatics, these people that are, you know, relatively, you know, uneducated when it comes to government, obviously, and not really caring about the integrity of the Constitution or American democracy. And there's a lot of them out there. Then they're being sort of brainwashed into believing that they are true patriots as opposed to American extremists and radicals who are really anti-constitutional. And it's a sad thing when people get convinced of that, when they aren't capable of enough free thought to realize that they're being misled.
You know, on Friday we talked about the fact they had this big Justice Sunday thing. And in the church, that Highview church in Louisville, mm-hmm. they drew about 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we also talked about a religious service in another church, in a Presbyterian church.
A reaction.
That was taking place at 2:30 yesterday afternoon as opposed to 7 o'clock last night for Justice Sunday. They drew 1,200. Now, that's not bad.
Were they simulcast to 1,000 churches?
No, they weren't simulcast to 1,000 churches. But you know what? I hope people got the message out of that. Because what we're seeing, I think, is going to be an eventual backlash by progressive people of faith against this foolishness. Because they, you know, progressive people who are Christians and who belong to different churches, they're kind of like the silent majority in all this. Their voices haven't really been heard yet.
Yeah, progressive people of faith in terms of like realizing that a separation of church and state is necessary to engage in all the different faiths of the world and to do what faith is supposed to do, which is to, you know, lift people up, to help people out, to engage in empathy and charity, not to use it as these, you know, neo-fascist, Christo-fascist zombie brigades are, to repress people's rights, to redefine how people should live, to impose their morality on others, to be intolerant. This is a group of people, James Dobson and his son, the Antichrist, are people that literally use the word of tolerance and diversity as negative traits.
Oh, yeah, they do.
They say that it's like they encourage tolerance. How is that even being said in that tone with any sort of confidence? And these are the people that consider themselves Christian. These are people that hate. And the people that lead them are taking that hate and trying to, you know, bully the country into buckling under them. So the progressive people of faith, like, and they try to make us look like, you know, we're anti-faith. They try to make Democrats look like it. They try to make that liberal, like, what I say is anti-faith. Look, I have to have faith every morning just to get out of bed. It may not be the same faith that they have, but believe
Most Americans don't have the same faith that they have.
Yeah.
That's the game that they're running on.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Bolton when we come back, and also talk about, you know, we're going to get into Iraq a little bit, and as you said, we'll obviously talk about delay and that Medicare horror. A lot of stuff going on for the first day of the week. I'm going to try and wrap my brain around it. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition, delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less. Air America Radio.
The hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm sorry, people. It's Monday. It has to happen every week. What can I tell you? And I'm learning just like how, like, I go into a rage somewhere like Sunday afternoon when I start to think about the week. That, you know, I start seething around Sunday around 4. Yesterday I went to see The Interpreter, the Sean Penn, Nick, what's her name? Nicole Kidman. Yeah, that's it. Nicole Kidman. She did something to her face. I don't know what she did to her face, but her mouth looks funny.
Really?
Yeah, you know when you see movie stars, you're like, what the hell is going on with her mouth? Why does it look funny?
Wow.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know if it's Botox or stretchy stretch. I don't know what she did, you know, but she definitely looks like they might have installed one of those knobs on the back of her head that they tighten every few months. So I'm not sure what's going on with that. But the movie itself, I found compelling, found it interesting, found it touching. But, you know, it's, with political thrillers, you know, it's one of those movies where you leave the theater and you go, who was that guy that did that thing? But was he the guy that, wait a minute, who was that phone call part of the, and what about the guy that showed up with the gun and that thing? How come, I don't know if that works. And you got to sit there and wonder if there's a logic to it, but that's going to happen with any complex thriller. But I thought it held up pretty good. It was beautifully shot in New York. You see the movie and it's one of those movies where you're like, wow, that's New York. It's all New York. And the interiors of the United Nations were beautiful. And actually the politics of it were pretty encouraging.
Now, they actually got to shoot inside the U.N.?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. They shot inside the U.N., in the park of the U.N., all over New York. It's great when you go see a New York movie and you live in New York, like, hey, there's a place that we, you know what I mean?
So how many stars?
How many stars were in it?
Stars do you give it?
Oh, are we doing on a star system now?
You know.
How many stars are there?
Five is an epic.
Oh, really? I give it probably 3 stars.
Wow. Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, because the reason why is I enjoy seeing Sean Penn, because I see him as some sort of co-worker, in the sense that, like, we're the same age. Like, I remember really being impressed with him when I was younger, and even though he's an ass, I like seeing him. I like seeing him getting old, and I think he's a pretty good actor. And also, I liked Nicole Kidman, though I don't love her as a person, I don't think. I don't know her that well. I find I have a love-hate relationship with her, but I think she was pretty good.
Okay.
Who else was in it? And I like Sidney Pollack a lot. Anything Sidney Pollack does, I like him more as an actor than I do as a director, but I think he did a pretty good job with this. But he's in it, too, for just a few minutes, and there's just something about him that I get a kick out of. Like,
so,
what?
I wonder how this review is going to differ from Mr. Maron's.
Dr. Maron?
Yes, Dr. Maron.
Well, you know, I'm not sure how to do movie reviews yet, because I remember one time I tipped the end of a movie and I got a lot of flack from that, and
you
I don't want to do it.
You take notes from your dad, man.
Yeah, he just says, oh, yeah, a lot of action, good stuff. Yeah, I'll be interested. I bet you, here's what, I'll lay money on this about my father's movie review in terms of The Interpreter. I don't know, it was a little slow for me. You know, but it all takes place, it revolves around a dictatorship in an African country, and it revolves around Nicole Kidman having been brought up there, and I found it to be an engaging film. Here's what I will say about the Interpreter. I've forgotten a lot of it today, and I saw it yesterday. It was it didn't linger with me, though I enjoyed being there while I was. So I'm sorry I've eaten up a little time here, but it's our time. Bolton. Let's get, you know what, let's listen to that call. We talked to John Bolton on the phone last week, and then when we come back, we'll get into the nuances of, you know, what's going on today. Can we hear that, Chris?
Let's take this call and treat it, you know.
With the respect it deserves?
Well, it could be him. Okay.
Yes, this is John Bolton.
Yeah.
I don't usually call into radio programs like this, but I happen to be listening to your show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I felt compelled to defend myself in a calm and rational manner.
Well, I think you've got a lot to explain. I mean, besides saying that the UN shouldn't exist, there are lots of allegations about your temper and the shoddy way you treat subordinates. And
I think you're trading in unsubstantiated allegations that represent an attempt to destroy my character and maintain the status quo at the United Nations.
Right, right. But these stories also seem to match up, man. I mean, you apparently berated a State Department analyst for a CIA report about Chinese weapons. Another State Department official called you a kick-down, kiss-up sort of guy. Several people allege that you tried to fire them because they didn't agree with you.
I believe I've been misunderstood and misinterpreted and mischaracterized.
Look, dude, an aide worker says you chased her down a hall and threw things at her. She says you were pounding on her door and kept sliding threatening letters underneath it. I mean, from all accounts, you have a real mean streak, man.
Listen, you stupid motherfucker!
Whoa.
You keep talking to me like this, I will fucking break you!
Hey, you hear me?
I'll stick my fucking fist into your heart and pull your nuts out from the inside! You will not disrespect Bolton! Bolton will own you!
Wow. That was our conversation with John Bolton from last week. He had to take a break to keep screaming. He literally had to take a breather. So this is an amazing thing, that Riley, it seems that the Democrats in the Senate are holding strong against Bolton. They are all united. They are united in derailing Social Security. They are united in protesting any health ethic, protesting a GOP rule change with the House Ethics Committee. They are uniting, and that's the best they can do.
Well, for right now it is, and you know, with Bolton, my only question is this. Why would anyone think that someone who was a superior of another person would, you know, could get away with chasing an employee through a hotel, making comments about her sexuality, hinting that she was a lesbian, talking about her weight, a whole bunch of others that had nothing to do with her job? Under normal circumstances, these people would be sued.
We're going to talk about it more when we come back. And what's he going to eat? That's the guy we want to send to represent us
in the United Nations. That's the scariest part of all this. And this is Air America Radio.
Four past the hour, Mark Maron here. Mark Riley over there.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Thanks for being with us here on Monday. Good morning to all those people listening to us in the middle of the night on the West Coast, because it's our only option. Sorry, folks, it had nothing to do with that. There's a strange, unholy alliance here at Air America, and it's weird, you know, politics. I tell you, Riley, I'm starting to understand politics in so many different ways. I'm starting to understand politics on a national level, on a local level, and on a business level. Very interesting stuff, because you know what? It's all the same crap, Riley.
Well, everything is political.
That's for sure. I thought, you know, I was just being passive aggressive, but apparently I'm being political. When I thought I was just being an ass, it turns out I was actually rallying for something.
There you go.
Yeah, it's if you look at it that way, it is certainly all politics. But I'd like to know what the exact definition of politics is. You know, I'm going to do a little research in a minute on what that is, because it would interest me. Here we go. We know a lot of people out there out of work and spent your Sunday leafing through the want ads or monster. We want to help. Be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So here is our Morning Sedition Monday Help Wanted listing. News item. According to a recent USA Today article, domestic kidnapping is a thriving industry in areas of Iraq. So, wanted. Kidnappers, self-starters. Are you a Sunni extremist with a deep-rooted hatred of the Shia dogs who are conspiring with the infidels to steal our country? Are you good with knots? Then the exciting and profitable world of domestic kidnapping could be for you. Kidnappers can work from home as long as you don't have a windowless room, as long as you have a windowless room or closet, and make big bucks doing it. Leave the abduction of aid workers and
and journalist to the foreign elements. As a domestic kidnapper, you'll be grabbing the kind of Sunni businessmen who will net you enormous ransoms or be really fun to behead. And best of all, kidnapping is a no-lose proposition. Even if an abduction goes awry and you're killed in a hail of gunfire, you'll spend eternity in a martyr's paradise. Hope you like figs and virgins. Apply today, and the next time you see one of those glamorous hostage videos with someone holding a machine gun to the head of a quaking victim, you could be the man behind the mask. Yes. It's getting dark. It's getting dark in here. So, moving to Iraq, that was an uneasy segue from a very drastic comedy bit into four car bombings that actually happened yesterday. 21 Iraqis were killed and 73 were wounded in one of the bloodiest days since the Iraqi election. It's amazing, Riley, because this stuff really isn't letting up, and we've been reporting on it the last few days, starting last week. There was a sort of lull there, but what really comes clear to me, what I'm starting to think, and I don't know if I'm alone in thinking this, is that we had some information from an Alterman article, which I think was it Alterman or who was it? Was it Eric Alterman?
No, Coburn.
Patrick, right.
Coburn.
I know there's brothers. There's Patrick Coburn, and then there's another Coburn, isn't there?
Yeah.
So he said, he was speculating that that the reason why reports aren't coming out of Iraq as they used to with as much frequency is that the American forces are not engaging as much as they were in the more dangerous parts of Iraq, and the press is sort of bunkered into hotels, and they are not getting out to cover as much of the stories as they once were. Mick Ware, Times Baghdad bureau chief, who we talk to frequently, said that that is not really what he's seeing, that the facts are a little flaky. But from what I'm seeing, I'm starting to think that the number of Iraqi national forces that are being killed, it indicates to me, from all we've heard, is that a lot of money has been diverted into training these guys, mm-hmm. By the Americans and by the French. All that we've heard is that they're not that steady. They aren't as well trained as they should be. Their alliances are sort of shaky because they're frightened of reprisals within their own communities, tribal and otherwise. But it seems to me that these are the guys getting hit the most. So I wonder if we're starting to detach and, sort of saying like, all right, well, here's our mess. Go ahead. Be careful. See you later, fellas. You know what I'm saying?
No, I know exactly what you're saying. What's happening is that the Americans are beginning to try and pressure this new Iraqi government to get themselves a cabinet together, because the Americans have promoted the idea that the insurgency has been ramped up specifically because there is no new government. Now, I don't think that's a valid idea because, the troops are allegedly being trained whether there's a new government or not. The idea that the targets of a lot of these attacks are Shia, mm-hmm. are in fact either in Shiite strongholds in the country or in places where large numbers of Shia gather. And, of course, they are still targeting police and military installations as well.
In a more complex attacks than usual. That's the one thing we've noticed from many reports is that these are not just, random bombings. I mean, some of these are fairly well-organized, multi-personed attacks that have sort of distractions and then attacks.
Yeah.
And some of the American military brass was coming out saying that's because they're desperate. And I don't know, that logic seems to fall apart for me.
I don't know that they are desperate at all at this point. What they seem to be doing, as you point out, is a very well-coordinated series of attacks where you attack one situation, and as people respond to that, you attack again in the same situation. Up until, from the period starting Monday, April 18th, and what date are we now? We are Monday, 24th. April 25th.
25th.
Yeah, so that's in a week's time. We are talking about 189 Iraqis killed or found dead, 178 injured, 6 U.S. soldiers killed, 5 wounded. Now, most media focuses on the American casualties. You have to kind of read between the lines to get the number of total Iraqi casualties, and it's scary, 189 people dying in a week?
Yeah, that's heavy, man, and over several different episodes. Monday, April 18th, there was in Baghdad, gunmen killed a senior defense ministry advisor and his son as they drove home. Tuesday, April 19th, al-Qaeda claimed responsibility for a suicide bombing near an army recruitment center in Baghdad that killed at least 6 Iraqis, wounding 44. In another town, 75 miles west of Baghdad, insurgents opened fire on Iraqi soldiers, killing four and wounding seven. In western Baghdad, this is all on one day, a car bombing apparently targeting a U.S. patrol wounded seven Iraqis. You know, masked men shot and killed a professor in Baghdad. That was all on Tuesday. Wednesday, 58 Shiite civilian corpses, all suspected victims of Sunni Muslim extremists, were found floating in the Tigris River. I mean, you know, this stuff is not, this does not seem to be the acts or behaviors of a desperate insurgency or one that is on its last legs. I mean, this is mind blowing. I mean, a U.S. official said definitely the violence is getting worse. And he also said that it had increased since the end of March. Roadside bombings and attacks on military targets are up by as much as 40% in parts of the country. I mean, it's, this war is still going on, and I don't know if the Americans are detaching on some level in terms of pulling troops back or getting ready to send them home, but on another level, diplomatically and also, you know, quite honestly, you know, we've opened this gateway to hell. And the idea that they may be cutting and running or detaching or sending people home, you know, in light of what's going on there now, it's sort of a little disturbing.
Well, it should be disturbing because it should bring back to a lot of people some very basic questions about what we're doing there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
We are at a point now where obviously with this increase in insurgent attacks, something has to be done. Americans can't just completely cut and run there, although if you look at past history, if you look at, for example, what happened to the Kurds after the first Gulf War, Americans can, in fact, cut and run, you know, if people really want to do that. But I'm not sure there's the political will in Washington to, you know, really begin a staged troop pullout. But what we are seeing, as you very correctly point out, Mark, is an increase, and you know, the American generals have been talking about this for a while, an increase in the Iraqi components of these, the death toll, and by some inference, the fight against the insurgents.
Yeah, it's very interesting, too, that, you know, this is a death toll, Iraqi death tolls, you know, what Iraqi numbers mean to Americans, you know, in the general population. I mean, most of us, you know, you want to see the troops come home. You don't want to put Americans in harm's way, but this administration put Americans in harm's way. We have no reasonable or even vague count of how many Iraqi civilians have been killed. Some people think upwards of 100,000. Now we're seeing these very real, very big casualties on behalf of Iraqi security forces that we help train.
Oh, absolutely. You know. And remember that an American woman who had gone over there to try to get an accurate count of how many Iraqi civilians were being killed was herself killed by a suicide bomber. That lady from, I believe her name was Rujika from Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
So we really don't have a count. Most Americans don't hear, and some argue don't want to hear. I'm not that great a pessimist, to be honest with you. I think the American people, if they knew the Iraqi death toll, would have a concern about the Iraqi death toll.
It concerns me because the numbers are mind-blowing. And, like, you never saw this number in incidents, you know, of American soldiers being killed there in this conflict. You don't see 40 guys taking it all at once, and God knows you don't want to. But the fact that these are Iraqis that we trained and that this was the plan, that this was the plan that they're hoping to put in place in this new Iraq, it's very disturbing. And also on top of that, the Patterns of Global Terrorism report that Condoleezza Rice has stifled in terms of numbers, you know, now we're just going to get some sort of vague overview, is really to mask the fact that terrorism is going up, that the insurgency is as powerful as it was before. This is this administration's attempt to disappear the war from the public consciousness of this country. And it is a concerted effort, and it is something they are diligently trying to do on an administrative level. And it's a crime on some level because there are still Americans dying, and there's obviously, you know, dozens and dozens of Iraqi national forces dying and maybe hundreds of thousands of civilians being killed. It's awful. We will come back, and we will continue to talk. Well, actually, let's shift gears. We didn't get back to Bolton. We'll talk a little bit about John Bolton. We'll talk a little bit about the bug-killing dwarf king of the neocon death cult's legislative pig pack, Tom DeLay, hopefully going down or not. Some Democrats believe we should keep him around.
Good.
I'm not sure I'm on board with that. 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition, on the air and online. Morning'sEdition.com, Air America Radio.
50 past the hour. Mark Mann here with Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Yep.
Did I mention I'll be in Cincinnati, Ohio, May 6th and 7th? So everybody listening to 1530 WCKY, the revolution of talk radio, come check it out. I'll be at Go Bananas. Go Bananas! That's a funny comedy club name. Go to morningsedition.com and you can get all the info on that. That, of course, is the sound of the fax machine with our liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here they go. Write them down, folks. One, urge Greenpeace. What is wrong with my mouth? Urge Greenpeace to organize radical indigenous Alaskan resistance group to block drilling in the Anwar. Suggested name, Eskino. No, Eskino. Two, it's spring break. Urge college students to stick it to the man without drinking, taking drugs, or having sex. Go wild, man. Three, send Senate long books to read during filibusters. Moby Dick, some Tom Clancy, and maybe Clinton's autobiography. Four, start internet rumor that surprise twist of the new movie The Interpreter is that John Bolton goes on a UN killing spree. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. So Justice Sunday is over, you know? If Hitler had had the internet and closed-circuit TV like those evangelicals, we'd be speaking German right now. Wake up, sheeple. You're on the verge of getting canceled.
Oh, wow.
All right. You know what? I'm done with it all. I'm going to put a bullet in my head.
No, you're not.
I'm kidding, man. I'm kidding, man.
Chris was nervous, man. You got to be careful saying that stuff.
Oh, come on. There's just moments of, like, you know, where I'm just like, wow. Wow. Why? And, you know, it all revolves around language. It revolves around being, you know, like, I hate when these, you know, right when you feel like you got a little traction with these idiots, with these Republicans, when you hear people, when I hear what they're saying, when I'm listening to, I was listening, who would you listen to? It was either Tony Perkins or James Dobson. You know, when they start saying that they're extreme radicals within the Senate and they're the extreme radicals, it's just these games with language. I just don't have the Constitution, like, because I like when it's sort of like, yeah, we're going to win, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, damn it. It's not even a fair competition.
No, but see, politics is always about that. Look,
I don't like it.
Do you seriously think that most of these Republicans on Capitol Hill thought that, A, Bush would have such a smaller chance of getting his Social Security thing done? Do most people think that John Bolton's nomination would run into these kinds of obstacles? Does somebody think that everybody and their grandmother be writing stories like this about Tom DeLay? The fact is, these Republicans thought they had a clear path and smooth sailing in front of them, and it hasn't been that way for a number of reasons. One of which is that they are doing what they always do when they have a majority, and that is overreach. But you also see, Mark, the fact that a lot of them are getting caught up in their own excess. How else do you describe John Bolton? A guy who chased a woman around a hotel, sticking threatening notes under her door. Under normal circumstances, that'd be a hostile work environment lawsuit going on.
Well, I just, like, you know, I am thrilled that Tom DeLay keeps getting hit. I am thrilled that, you know, the guy, he's a rugged, tough little man, you know, and he seems to be deflecting a lot of this stuff. And I just hope to God that the stuff keeps pushing through, that enough of his own party starts to say, let's get him out of here. He's stinking up the whole place. I hope to God that happens, because there are new revelations today about his boy, the lobbyist Jack Abramoff, literally buying him presents on his credit card.
Well, yeah, this is kind of a 1-2 punch. Back in 2000, that plane trip that DeLay and several of his aides and wife took to London and Scotland, this is back in 2000, this was paid for in part by an American Express credit card held by none other than Jack Abramoff. Another part of the expenses for this trip, including food, phone calls, and other items, was billed to a credit card used by a second registered Washington lobbyist, and we've talked about him before, Edwin Buckham. Now, the problem is, DeLay is not supposed to be doing this. He is not supposed to be having lobbyists, registered lobbyists in both their cases, paying for anything that he does.
Yeah, but the thing is like, all these guys, all they have to do is say, like, well, I didn't know. I didn't know that that's how it was being paid for. That's all this guy DeLay has to do. This is a guy that manages the entire Congress of the, you know, the Republican side of things. He's a bully. He's a coercive little man that knows people's weak spots, that manipulates people all day long, that is, you know, it's clear by every behavior this guy makes that he knows everything that's going on in that house, yet he didn't know that this guy was buying him presents on his credit card.
It's ridiculous, and I don't know what has to happen to make it stick.
Well, see, there are some people who think that we ought to just let him twist in limbo. You pointed this out earlier. Until next year's legislative elections. I don't know whether that's a winning strategy, quite frankly, because it looks like there's critical money. Now there's a story that many of the Indian tribes that had come together to donate money to an organization started by Jack Abramoff, the Capital Athletic Foundation. That money was supposed to be helping inner-city young people and, at the same time, provide access, nod, nod, wink, wink, to Tom DeLay, and apparently that money was going to Israel.
Well, the accusation is Jack Abramoff being, you know, an extreme Zionist was funding some, you know, anti-Palestinian movements within the settlements.
Yeah,
some
money
in the West Bank. Some of the money was going to arm some people or to protect them or to give them some equipment. And it's just very ironic that the Indians are sort of like, wait a minute, you mean this money is going to, you know, oppress indigenous people in another country? But nonetheless, they didn't know about that either. So there's a lot of things that aren't being known. And I think that Tom DeLay is lying when he says he didn't know. He did know, and I think everybody else knows that.
Well, if he didn't know, what in the world is he doing running the business of the House of Representatives? He had his daughter and his wife on the payroll for $500,000 to organize events for him.
He knew
they
that.
Didn't know. Yeah, he knew that. They didn't know. No one gave him a heads up on this. Of course not. This is the way the man does his business.
He knew.
And people need to come to grips with the fact that this is exactly the kind of inside the beltway nonsense that virtually regardless of party, most Americans deplore, most Americans are repulsed by the idea. Hey, wait a minute. I'd love to have some guy picking up my, you know, my expenses for stuff.
Well, you know that money that he gave his wife and kid, you know that he's sort of, after that sits in the bank for about 6 months, he's like, all right, give me a little of that.
Yeah, give me a little of that.
It's all in the family. It's a game.
Yes.
He knows. And I just hope you're right. I think that the American people do care about ethics, and what we're going to see when we come back is that, you know, whether we leave him there to keep stinking the place up, you know, whether we leave DeLay in place so people even hate him more and care more about ethics, or do we try and get him out now?
Now. I say now. You say.
No, let's leave. I say no. I say now. What do you mean?
You say now. I say we'll be back. This is Air America Radio.
Past the hour. It's the Morning's Edition here on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course, condescending liberals who know their right, and all of you strange, lurking conservatives who are listening because secretly you want to know the truth. That's what I say. I am here. It's Monday. Riley's here. Kalo's here. I got to get rid of a cat, Kalo, and I was so hoping that I could give it to your girlfriend so she could take it to where she works, but I missed the window on that.
Yep.
As much as I love my cats, there's one I think that's, you know, it's getting to this point where the cat Olympics that take place while I'm sleeping are starting to get on. They're getting too big to be flying around the apartment. You know, I am amazed that the people downstairs from me have not said, you know, dude, what is going on up there? Are you running a zoo? Because literally, like, because I sleep at weird hours. I got to sleep from like 8 to 3. So around 2 in the morning, that's when it's like it's cat time. So literally, I'm waking up at like 1 in the morning because they're I don't know what they're doing. I think they're playing tennis against the wall in my living room. You would not believe the racket that is coming out of my three feral friends. And I just think that if I could find a nice home for one of them, and they're not feral anymore, they're relatively well-adjusted. They're starting to be warm and nice. So if you live in the New York area and you want a black and white cat, I've decided which one. You have to make a choice. It's like Sophie's Choice. It's like, which one?
Take a picture of it.
And put it on the website. Can I do that with my newfangled technology?
Yes, you can.
I just burned my first CD last week. That's how behind I am.
Uh-oh.
Riley, I don't know if you're like this, but I'm like this. Like, when I think of it's going to be too complicated for me to do something, that could be, you know, I'm just sort
you
of
just
like,
disengage. That's what I do.
Yeah, I'm just like, I can't be bothered with it.
Yep.
You know, and I went and I'm burning CDs. I'm like, oh my God, this is easy and it's so fun. I'm so close to buying an iPod. I think I might get the other kind though. The iRiver.
What?
Yeah, someone's been telling me about this iRiver thing. Yeah, look it up, Kayla. Let's see. The other
iRiver?
Yeah, there's a couple of different companies that make these things.
Oh.
This our friend of ours, Lori, a listener to the show, made us both little pouches that we have.
Yeah.
I thought she knitted them up or something. They're beautiful little handmade things with our initials on them. Thank you, Lori. In Los Angeles, I want to give our listeners a heads up because this is one of the few times that we actually found out, you know, before it happens, not from a listener, but from the actual, you know, up and ups or the higher ups, is that we're going to be taken off the air in Los Angeles because no reason, just because they feel like it out there. They're going to take us off and put a local radio show on. We were told that, well, I think we've been in L.A. this time for what, maybe even just a couple of months. But the interesting thing that a lot of you might not realize is that this isn't about ratings. You know, we didn't get taken off in San Francisco and replaced with Springer because our show wasn't popular. We've got hundreds of emails that are showing us that that's not the case. And these are hundreds of emails of people that feel powerless to do anything about it. And certainly it's upsetting to me. It hurts my pride. We know we put a lot of work into this show, and you know we've been given these other markets, and Springer is done right here in our own under our own, you know, brand, and you know he's bumping us off of our affiliates that we worked hard to get. And that's only because it's the name Springer. And if that means something to you as a liberal, well, then, you know, so be it. And, you know, enjoy Jerry's show. And I don't know why we don't get you know, more protection, you know, in terms of it's just the way it is. I asked the new CEO. We got a new CEO. I said, what's going on? And he goes, there's nothing we can do about it. Which is, that's very encouraging. You know, okay, well then, all right, so I'll just bite my lip and move on with this. You know, it's a new business for me, and I guess this is the way it works, is that there's nothing they can do about it. We are told, though, that there is going to be some headway made in finding, you know, other stations for our shows that aren't necessarily part of this alliance that they've made with Clear Channel and with what other affiliates are working with. And hopefully we can get back on the air. I mean, to me, like, I don't need to carry this around, and I don't want you guys out there who are fans of the show to misunderstand what's going on. This isn't a ratings issue. This is just business decisions made by, you know, affiliates, you know, program directors in your town. And that's the way this business works. You know, it's new to me, too. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry if you're a fan in L.A. and you like this, that we're going to be gone. But that's just the way it is, and apparently there's nothing that can be done about it. You can go to morningsedition.com for information as to, you know, where you can listen to our show, either stream it or get it on XM. And all you serious listeners who are writing in about the exclusive arrangement that has been made with XM, I'm sorry. We had nothing to do with that here on our show. We appreciate you listening to us, but this stuff, not unlike politics, is a little convoluted for me to understand. I don't know what the truth is about a lot of it, but it's not coming from us. So if you want to address your problems and issues around us getting taken off the air in your area, I would address them to Air America Radio. I mean, we want to hear from you at Morning Sedition, but there just seems to be nothing that we can do about it. And there doesn't seem to be anything coming down from the higher-ups that would allow me to think that there's anything that they can do about it or that they, as far as they're telling me, they're saying, hey, look, it's out of our hands. So I don't really know who to go to. But that's it for my public service announcement. You know, it's just like, I don't know, Riley, you've been doing this a long time. It hurts my feelings. And, you know, apparently this kind of stuff happens on radio all the time, and I'm not being a baby about it. I'm just trying to say that, you know, we got a lot of fans out there that are disappointed, and it hurts my feelings to get these emails. They're like, why? Why? Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know. Let me ask the people here. Why? And they're like, there's nothing we can do about it. So what am I supposed to do, beat myself up?
Well, look, some of this has to do with a lot of inside radio stuff that probably is best not to get into here. However, hope always springs eternal.
Good.
All right?
Yeah.
Whatever you get taken off one place, there's always the possibility you'll get put back on someplace else.
Well, maybe, yeah, it might even just be in your basement on your computer. So anyway,
wait a minute, I got friends who listen to us that way.
Yeah, no kidding. So let's get back. Me too. My wife listens to me like that. Listen, we're talking about Tom DeLay, and that there's a you know, I personally think that, you know, we should get as much dirt as we can on this guy, keep trying to push hard on him so he buckles and gets out. You know, I don't know how that's supposed to transpire. I guess it has to come from within his own part. party, that enough people have to distance themselves from him so he's because he's no longer effective as a House leader, and he's asked to step down by his own people because apparently, on terms of legality, he seems to be evading everything. But I'm under the belief that the sooner the better we get him out of there. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, no, I know exactly what you mean. Jonathan Alter, who is the senior editor and columnist at Newsweek, takes a slightly different view. He believes that Tom DeLay ought to be kept around, twisting in the wind, I guess,
yeah,
until the November 2006 off-year elections, the legislative elections, which will determine the face of the House of Representatives and, to a lesser extent, the Senate for the succeeding couple of years or so. Jonathan Alter believes that Tom DeLay's presence will eventually cause enough people to decide to vote Democrat that maybe the House of Representatives might swing back into the Democratic fold.
My belief, Riley, is that, you know, their propaganda machine is too damn good to let this guy sit, because, you know, I've seen how people stick on things, how their consciousness works. If they leave him in there, they'll basically be able to spin it the other way. People's memories are short. Now, I don't know in terms of what's going on in the Senate and in the House, but, you know, their memories may not be short, but the general populace, their memories are pretty short. Now, granted, they can use whatever the longer he stays in there, you know, given that his behavior will keep up. We've got the goods on him now. You've got to figure that, you know, how much more of this crap can this guy do, you know, without realizing he's going to get busted and it's going to work against him. So I think while we got the goods, we should make it stick as best as possible and try to bully the guy out.
Well, see, this is the thing that Alter argues, and again, this is not my argument, but this is what he says in Newsweek, that a lot of the things that Democrats are trying to get done in Congress, in this session of Congress, are not going to get done whether DeLay is there or not. And again, he believes that at a point, it will, you know, his being around and being left to twist in the wind might cause the American people to have a problem with Bush's overall agenda. Now, I don't know that Bush's overall agenda is in complete lockstep with Tom DeLay's agenda.
I think he's out of his mind. I think that, like, you know, if we don't act with some sort of, you know, real aggressiveness around that, the idea that, you know, people will start to think anything, given the fact that they have the control of most of the propaganda outlets in this country and an incredible amount of grassroots machines to make people think what they want them to think. And I'm not denying the fact that people will they're starting to smell a rat here, but I think that they'll smell it even more if he's pushed out. And then we bring in the next guy, and then I think that if DeLay gets pushed out, we can start to see how he affected other Congress people within the House and how they're dirty.
Well, see, a lot of this, Mark, has to do with, you know, trying to raise money, trying to get enough money. DeLay has raised almost $500,000. For this run for re-election, compared to around 100,000 he raised just a couple of years ago. These guys like to gird their loins. They've got a Tom DeLay appreciation dinner coming up later on this week on Capitol Hill, and as a matter of fact, a place that's two blocks from the Capitol. And this is how these folks are trying to, they're using the traditional means of trying to fight this off. I don't know whether using the traditional means is in the best interest of the American people, given what we now know about how, you know, Tom DeLay's dealings during his 10 years or so in the House of Representatives. We keep seeing the same thing over and over again, this kind of excessive, you know, I don't want to pay for anything mentality that damages the American body politic a lot more than either party is prepared to admit.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, he's done a lot of things for a lot of people with a lot of money. So what do you think out there, folks? Do you think that Tom DeLay should be sent away now? Should we continue to try to get him out now? Or you think we should, you know, leave him around and use him politically, if that's possible? 866-303-2270 is our number. What's on your mind about that particular issue? DeLay, should he stay or should he go? I wish we could actually have that power. And once we take the poll, actually get rid of him. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Call us at 866.
Ha! That's awesome. Go on.
303.
Wow, yes. Yes, I love it.
2270.
Oh, yeah, drop the bomb. Drop it. There's not a dry eye in the house. Keep going.
That's 866-303-2270.
Okay, well, just so you know, it was good, but I was also being pretty generous.
This is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Thank you.
past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. It's Monday. We're talking about Tom DeLay. Some people think that it's better if he stays. Others think it's better if he goes. I say if we get the opportunity to get him out, get him out. Let's make an example of some kind. I don't know if maybe that's I'm talking too strongly. I just think that if he's as dirty as all that and they want to get rid of him, I'm all for that. But some people think that he should stay to make an example out of him or to use him politically, if we can, the Democrats, that is. Roxy in Seattle, what do you think?
Hi, Roxy.
Well, definitely got to get rid of him.
Yeah.
Keep pushing.
I think you're right.
Yeah, because, first of all, we've got some momentum going
mm-hmm.
on some of this stuff with the Bolton thing. That really is working.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it may not work in the end, but it's definitely, it's better than just laying there.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And secondly, you got to peel off the moderate Republicans, and the only way to do that is to make it uncomfortable for him.
I think you're right. I agree with you.
They're aligning himself with this guy, and they just get. I mean, it's really war. I mean, they're getting more and more outrageous.
But if we let him stay there, though, and these moderate Republicans that are aligning himself with him, if we can, if that becomes more effective if he stays, would you rather he stay?
No, it won't, though.
Okay, good.
It won't, though.
I'll believe you.
No. And, you got to build victory on victory.
Okay, I'm with you, Roxy. I appreciate it.
And I got to say one more thing.
Okay.
You guys, some of us listened to you guys twice, okay?
Okay.
and so you got that. And, it's only been a year. Don't worry about it. But I'm really pissed about it. I have no idea Sirius. I have both XM and Sirius. I listen at work on one. Apparently.
I just want people to know I'm trying to inform them. We sit here and we try to inform people about as best we can about politics in the world, and yet there seems to be some cryptic things going on within our own world.
You're a social critic. You're kind of obnoxious. But that's what you're supposed to be.
Yeah, no, it didn't even register as a put down at all.
Right. No. You're doing your job.
I have to go. Bye, Roxy.
Thanks, Roxy.
Was that obnoxious? I just didn't want to disappoint her. Okay, Jared in Chicago, long time, buddy. What's going on?
Hey, Jared, what's up?
Good morning, guys.
I bought a Serge Gainsbourg CD, by the way.
That's great. I have a pile of CDs I intend to send eventually.
All right, take your time, man. It's not your job.
Okay.
What's on your mind?
I like doing it. As a mere fact, you played a couple of songs from the mix CD that I sent was as big an ego boost.
Oh,
okay. Well,
I'm just glad you guys like it.
No, I love
you. And if there's another station that streams you from 6 to 9 Eastern, you got to stream. I'm sorry, 9 to noon.
Yeah.
You got to put it on the website.
Oh, you mean because KPOJ is gone?
Yeah.
It
killed me. I turned on one day. I was like, what the hell is this?
I know. Go to morningsedition.com. They're going to get that up and going. There seems to be a little trouble with the website, but they're trying to figure out a way to get everybody who wants our show to be able to listen to it. What's on your mind about DeLay, Jared?
You keep them, and I'll tell you why.
All right.
You got to conduct a party-wide indictment, and you got to say to other people, and look at the districts that narrowly went Republican in the House,
uh-huh.
and you say, listen, your guy, I mean, Christopher Shays didn't win by that much, and I realize, I mean, he's not the worst Republican. He's not the worst guy. You know, he's got some sort of integrity, and there's some people around in Chicago or all over the country. But you march into these districts, and you say, this guy continues to leave Tom DeLay in charge, and he's going to continue to screw the country over if you leave this guy in charge, and this is why you need to get rid of all Republicans.
Right.
I think it'd be hysterical if Tom DeLay won his district and you managed to knock out another 20 or 30 Republicans across the country, because they're responsible for him. It's like, I mean, you know what?
So you're saying the more he stays there, the dirtier he gets, the more we can pin this on other Republicans. And even if he stays, we can make the other Republicans in districts that are more or less that are less likely to vote in a Republican to get rid of him.
Yeah, if we can't use this guy as a foil to knock other people out, then we can't win, period. Or we got to get somebody else. I like what their labor secretary had to say. We got to stop whining. Got to go on the attack.
All right, thanks, man. Thanks, Jared.
Thanks,
good talking to you. Glad you're well, buddy.
I don't know, man. I'm a little nervous about that strategy because remember that, Democrats can run somebody against a wavering Republican, but so can conservative Republicans run somebody against, for example, a Chris Shays in a primary. So that Democrat is facing an arch conservative Republican
mm-hmm.
in the general, not a moderate one. That can happen, too.
Uh-huh.
You know, you have to take all of that kind of stuff into account when you get into politics.
Yeah, I'm just learning that. Wow. Because I'm like such an immediate gratification freak. I'm like, let's get rid of them now if we can. Just get rid of them.
Yeah.
I want my anger sated.
Well, I believe you ought to go, too. But we're going to come back in a moment. We're going to talk about some of the unkindest cuts of all. All right? Folks who can least afford it. When we return here on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're talking to you about Tom DeLay. Better he stay or better he go politically for us being the other side in all its, you know, multifaceted, diverse manifestations, the other side. We, the ones that are proudly different. Josh, New York, what's going on?
Hey, Josh.
Hey.
Hey, man. What do you think?
Get rid of him.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I'm in New York right now, but I live in Austin, and so I see a lot of stuff firsthand that most of the country doesn't really, you know, get in their local newspapers, and was watching sort of at the front lines of the battle when he redistricted, you know, most of Texas.
There was some resistance there. There's a lot of people that don't like Bush, that don't like DeLay in Texas. I perform there occasionally.
Yeah, definitely, especially in Austin.
Yeah.
And one of the few bright spots in the last election was that DeLay's efforts to get rid of Lloyd Doggett failed, which was the main focus of his redistricting effort, was to get Lloyd Doggett out of Congress, and he wasn't able to do that in spite of making his Lloyd's district is some, you know, some strip of barren desert on the way south to Mexico now.
Wow.
But nonetheless, he's still in there. We managed to get him back in office. So, you know, we've had minimal victories against DeLay, but to think that we're going to be able to keep this in the news until the next election and then outmaneuver Karl Rove in terms of whoever we put up against him is fantasy.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the propaganda machine is way too strong to waste any time. If we got a window of opportunity to get him out, we should get him out.
Yeah.
Definitely. Thanks a lot for your call, man.
Thanks, Josh.
Take care.
Seems like we got a kind of almost an even split. There's some, but see, now that guy was calling from here in New York, but he lives in the belly of the beast in Texas, and he says you can't afford to let Tom DeLay, you know, attempt to gerrymander the Texas legislature yet again.
I mean, it's interesting to talk to people from Texas, because even when I've worked there, it's surprising that they know these guys intimately, much differently than we do. Let's take a call from someone listening to The Voice in Connecticut. Gabe, we don't get a lot of calls from Connecticut. Nice to talk to you. What's on your mind? What do you think?
Hey, Gabe.
Hey, Mark and Mark. I think we should leave them twisting in the wind until 2006.
Is he really twisting, though?
I believe he is. I mean, he may be soon under indictment down in Texas, which works to our favor. But here's my reason for it. We have five districts in Connecticut, and all five went for Gore, and then all five went for Kerry. And we're only sending two Democrats to the House from Connecticut. So we're losing three of those districts. In Chris Chase's district, Diane Farrell ran against DeLay specifically and lost 52-47, and this is before anyone knew who DeLay was. Now he's threatened federal judges. He's gotten on the radio and on the air about Terry Schiavo. I think that picks us up three seats just in Connecticut.
Interesting. Okay. Well, thanks for your input.
All right.
What do you think of that? That's your state?
Well, yeah. It's interesting. He's very correct. Out of the five members of Congress, three of them are Republicans, including Chris Shays. There's a woman, I believe, named Johnson who's still up there. There is the question of whether or not DeLay's being left as a straw dog would end up turning those districts in Connecticut. And right now, the gap is such that you need some places across the country to turn turn Democratic. You need some people either to win open seats or to actually defeat incumbent Republicans, which is a difficult thing to do. So, yeah, on that level, I understand the point. I just don't know whether delay, if you let him twist in the wind, isn't going to come back stronger at some point. If folks aren't careful, it seems to me like you strike when the iron's hot. But that's just my own judgment.
I think he's learned the ways of his enemies from the past, the cockroach. I think he's learned how to survive, you know, under extreme sort of situations.
Well, this is an extreme situation for a House Majority Leader to have this much bad news put out on him in less than 2 months is extraordinary.
Yeah.
This credit card thing, this is not going to just run away. The questions about whether or not this man is competent to hold the position of House Majority Leader is going to come to the fore soon if he just keeps saying, well, I thought somebody was paying for it. I thought this one was paying for it. Or that foundation, I don't need to know.
Yeah, you
can't play anything deeper than that.
You can't play stupid. After a certain point, it's just sort of like, we know you're not stupid.
Exactly. You know?
All right, well, thanks for your calls. We're going to move on, folks. Appreciate your input. Let's talk about this story that you hit me to yesterday when we were on the phone, Riley. The Medicare, they're closing down all of what are they called, the Medicare assessment offices? How does that, first of all,
okay.
Tell me. Okay, well, I say I'm old, right, and I got problems,
okay.
And I got no money, and I need to get on Medicare. In the old system, what did I have to do?
Well, here's the problem. If you were an older person and you ended up going to the hospital for a specific treatment,
uh-huh.
And Medicare then turned around and said, we're not paying for that treatment. You're a Medicare beneficiary. And they say, we're not paying.
Mm-hmm.
The way things are right now, you would have 140 different Social Security offices across the country to go and have an administrative law judge hear your case.
Yeah, like, look at me, I'm sick.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sick, I need the help, et
right.
cetera.
Okay? Right. Yeah.
Currently, about two-thirds of those face-to-face hearings are adjudicated in favor of the beneficiary. What's going to happen in July is that the jurisdiction will change from Social Security to the Department of Health and Human Services.
Mm-hmm.
They have decided to consolidate these 140 places where this can happen into four.
Four for the entire country, Riley?
I know this is going to sound incredible to people, but yes, four. Cleveland, Miami, Irvine, California, and Arlington, Virginia. Four. From 140... down to four.
What the hell is that? What if I live in Idaho? What if I live in Portland?
Well, here's what you're going to have to do. They are now saying that they're going to start setting up teleconferencing centers where people who have claims that have been denied will go before these judges, but they won't physically be in the
all
same
right, so
room.
Wait, so you're saying this is probably going to be in those same Social Security offices that you were talking about before, and you're going to walk in with your problem. They're going to be like, oh, wait, let's see if we can get the machine to work. There's somebody here with needs to get judged. You know, and let's see if the machine, do we even have the teleprompter yet? So they're going to have to do this teleconferencing thing, most likely at the places that they once had to go to actually be judged in person as to whether or not they could get the Medicare benefits. And that they have to put the technology into place, and now people, sometimes when somebody's ill, it's like a doctor. Sometimes
yeah.
You have to be right there. You have to, you know, to see the person, to talk to them, to see how they're feeling, to feel the presence of their sickness.
Oh, well, yeah, and that's exactly what they're trying to stop having happen. Understand that if you, for example, have a Medicaid, you're a Medicare beneficiary, I'm sorry, and you were looking to appeal your case, and you were in New York, New Jersey, or all of New England. Let's say you're up in Boston, Mark. You know where this would be held, your hearing?
What?
Cleveland.
Oh, my God. So let's say I'm in Machias, Maine. That's the furthest point east in the state. I'd have to what?
Cleveland.
And let's say I'm 90.
Cleveland.
Oh, my God. That's too far for me to go.
Cleveland.
Because I'm sick and I need help. Oh, my. You know what? It's too late. I'm dying.
People in Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, you know where they'll be heard? Irvine, California.
Oh, my God.
Iowa?
Oh.
California.
So get moving. Maybe you ought to pack the car up and bring, you know, don't forget to bring a dialysis machine.
Now, here's the ugliest part of this, okay? The GAO, the Government Accountability Office, did a study on this. They questioned the reliance on video conferences, saying, quote, beneficiaries are often uncomfortable using video conference facilities and prefer to have their cases heard face-to-face. Now, why would the Department of Health and Human Services not want to have face-to-face hearing. They're saying that it's because they're, you know, it's more cost-efficient, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, but what you were saying before is that when they are met, when they are able to do this in person, most of the time it's judged in their favor.
Yeah.
Right? When it's done over, you know, a where you just see their head on a video conference, the possibilities of it being judged in favor aren't necessarily, not only are they less likely, but it's less likely for them to get a real assessment. So this is all part of the Republican or the neocon death cult's administration motto, that the subtext of their motto is adapt or die.
Yes.
They really are, what they're doing is they're stopping people from, a good many people, I imagine, from getting the type of medical attention that they need at a cost that makes sense or even, you know, paid for by Medicare, and they will die. These are old people. These are people that need help. These are people that can't travel four states to be assessed in person.
Yes.
Some of these people can't even make it to the Social Security office, to the teleconferencing room. You know, I mean, these are people that are in trouble and should be taken care of by this system that is already in place, not be denied this because of a cost-cutting experiment. This is all this is. This is to protect, you know, or to minimize their bottom line at the expense of people's lives. And these are people that are sick and old and need help.
And if you have any questions about how disorganized this entire thing is, understand that the government hasn't yet worked out the details. They don't even know where the sites are going to be. This is supposed to happen in July.
Yeah, I think someone was quoted as saying, we can do the video thing, right?
Yeah. We can do the video thing. Now, the director of the transition team at the Department of Health and Human Services refused to answer questions from the New York Times about the new hearing and appeals procedures or the logistical arrangements. What does that tell you? They don't know yet.
They don't care.
No, they don't. No, they do not.
That's what it
140
tells me.
Centers where you can go face-to-face down to four places, and they don't even know where the video conferencing is going to be emanating from yet.
Yes. Well, maybe they'll get the technology together. You know, it's horrible. Anyways, we're going to come back. We got the morning remembrance coming up. We've got the dream diary later. We had to, you know, we were taking calls. We didn't get to that for those of you who are waiting for it in its time slot. But we will be back with both of those things and also Justice Sunday.
Yeah.
We have to talk about that 45 past the hour Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Terry Jones from Monty Python. If you're like me, you're tired of having geeks and dogs repeat things you said 30 years ago back to you as if you don't remember saying them and then laughing as they think they're so damn clever. I mean, wow, you memorized a 30-year-old movie? Oh, good show, old chap. Oh, great. Be president of the United States. Come on. And now for something completely different. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. It's Monday morning, so take it easy. All right, go easy on yourself. It's going to be a long week. You know, they all seem a little long sometimes, but Monday, man, oh, man. I'm just starting now to turn it around a little bit, Riley.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you're all right.
I'm all right now, but when we got in here, boy, I thought I was going to hit something. You know, I thought I was going to throw something across the room. I thought I was going to do a Bolton.
Uh-oh.
I thought I was going to send some stuff flying. I was going to Boltonize this place for no reason. You know why? The only reason? Because I got to get up and do it again. You know? And I think a lot of people feel like that on Monday or Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Unfortunately, it's that time of week again, Riley, when we here at Morning Sedition take a moment at this time of sorrow to reflect in our morning remembrance.
As the people of the grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning Sedition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Already?
All right. George Mulkin, Oscar Mayer mascot. George Vulcan, the lovable little Oscar Mayer mascot who drove the legendary Wienermobile, and perhaps more than any other person in history, was responsible for introducing generations of happy children to meals of pig snouts, pig lips, spleens, intestines, skeletal muscles, listeria, rubber bands, glass, and machine parts. Died last week after a long career of just following orders.
Machine parts, that's in head cheese, right? The machine parts?
You know, like screws and things like that.
Yeah, sure, yeah. I've seen it. When you can see it right in the wrapper, right
Phillips,
through the plastic.
Phillips screws.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Sorry, buddy.
Historians say Oscar Mayer created Little Oscar in his Wienermobile in the 1930s to help achieve two important goals. One, inject dangerous amounts of fat into the American diet. And two, make fun of midgets. You washing these chairs with salt water?
Yeah. We got an allergy to salt water?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
It's a rare allergy.
It's very rare.
I can't go to the ocean or anything.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah, yeah. It's really hard. I can't cry.
It hurts.
The Wienermobile reached the peak of its persuasive powers for selling hot dogs in the 1960s, Mark.
Yeah.
With an estimated 5 million plastic whistles distributed, laying the groundwork for countless choking deaths, as well as 5 new strains of leukemia and colon cancer.
Man, this is evil stuff.
Oh, yeah. You know what else is evil? Paprika.
Oh, you've got a paprika problem?
Do I?
You need a...
Look at my face. Do I look like a guy who can take paprika?
No. No, you're blotchy. I don't even know what the hell's going on with you. You need a Kleenex? You're going to be all right?
Yeah, thanks, Matt.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Friends say Mulkin loved to drive the funny hot dog on wheels and never tired of appearing at supermarket parking lots to show off his big wiener. Mulkin requested his body be sprinkled with sodium nitrite and the ground-up husks of female red beetles in order to make his body appear delicious and fresh rather than its putrid gray color. I'm allergic to nitrites, too.
Yeah?
Yeah, they overexcite my taste buds.
Make you salivate? What's your allergic to problem?
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, Diane Knippers, or Knippers, conservative Christian. Diane Knippers, president of the Arch-Conservative Institute on Religion and Democracy, has passed away. For over 20 years, Mrs. Knippers worked tirelessly through the Institute to raise public awareness of the persecution of Christians in Asia and Africa. Her program was so successful, she was able to free up more of her time to persecute feminists in North America.
Oh.
Yeah. Is there a lawn in here?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, there's a... Didn't she say I was just mowing it? There's a mower right there.
That's not dichondra, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, you know I'm allergic.
I'm sorry, buddy.
Through her leadership, the Institute was able to instruct churches on how to force heresy trials on gay members of the clergy for committing the sacrilege of believing the sun does not revolve around the vagina. Bereaved friends say they gained comfort with the knowledge that Knippers is now up in heaven with Pope John Paul II, sharing a good laugh over the billions of unbaptized aborted fetuses burning in hell. Dude, I'm allergic to barbecue.
Are you? Barbecue too?
Yeah, you know, charcoal stuff. I don't know. It just really just drives me.
No, I understand. Like the smell of smoked meat.
Anyway, Mark.
You got
Mark?
More? Yeah.
This has been this week's Morning Remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, who's jumping on you?
Thank you, Mort. You have
appreciate it.
A good day, and be careful. I mean, I don't understand. Are you allergic to... You? Go ahead.
I'm allergic to dichondra. This table here?
Yeah. You want to get one more blow in before you go?
One more blow.
Whoa.
You offering me some tooth?
No.
Because that's one thing I'm not allergic to.
Really?
I'm one hell of a cokehead. You know that about me, right?
I was wondering how you kept so lean.
It ain't diet.
Yeah. I was more referring to your nose because I saw you got the Kleenex going. I thought maybe you wanted to let one go. And,
that would be misty-eyed, yeah.
Yeah, okay, buddy. Well, you take care, man.
Thanks a lot, man.
Wow. Thank you for doing that. Thanks for buttoning that with a blow.
Yeah,
I appreciate that. You take care, all right?
Thanks.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Love you.
Yeah, be careful. Take care of those hives or whatever the hell that is. It's an allergic reaction, I'm assuming. Yeah. Okay. Get out. What's Tom Johnson doing here? Was he thrown out of his house?
Uh-oh.
Our writer, one of our writers, Tom Johnson, who rarely comes before 9 o'clock, was here at 7:20, which only leaves me concerned. You know, I'm wondering, like, I saw him in the booth, I'm like, oh, there's got to be a story behind this.
Uh-oh.
Someone didn't sleep, there's some horrible problem somewhere. No? Yes? Maybe. All right. Well, I guess we'll get to that when we come back. We're going to get to Justice Sunday as well. We've got sound. We're going to hear from Anthony Perkins. We're going to hear from Bill Frist. We've got James Dobson on tap, a little Leahy. And maybe if we get to it, Chris Hedges from last week, his article in the New Harper is this month. Great guest.
Yes, great guest. And we're also going to be talking a bit about Justice Sunday with a free thinker. We've had her in here before. She's deep. We're going to get to all of this in the next hour here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition.
Good morning.
How are you, buddy? Good
I'm
morning.
Doing all right.
You all right?
Yeah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, condescending liberals who for it is never enough, and you working conservatives who are secretly attracted to Air America, attracted to the idea that there might be some information that doesn't have the same type of closure you used to, and it might actually have some truth to it. You know, my therapist tells me I got to write down my dreams every night, so this is my one from last night, my dream from last night. Don't correct my grammar through emails, anybody. I don't want to hear it. So I'm at this mega church in Kentucky, Riley, for the Justice Sunday show. The problem is I'm locked in an 8-foot steel cage with a cloth draped over it. Outside my cage, I can hear James Dobson screaming about people of faith being attacked and roasted and eaten. I hear the word Shivo, judicial homicide, and Ron Jeremy. I'm not sure what he had to do with it, but suddenly I feel myself being carried on stage and the cloth is removed. I'm hit in the eyes with this intense bright light and immediately hundreds of neocons start booing and throwing dirt clods and ball peen hammers and mashed potatoes and gravy and doll parts at me. James Dobson sneers and points at me and says, "Brothers and sisters, gaze upon the liberal Jew. Listen to his obstructionist filibuster. Listen to his satanic hate speech. Given half a chance, he'd kill Jesus all over again." Dobson gets a long, sharp stick, reaches through the bars, and pokes me hard in the ribs. He says, "Wouldn't you, huh? Speak, heathen." I say, "Ow! Hi, I'm Mark Maron, and this is Morning Sedition." Everybody starts booing and throwing dirt clods at me. "Today, the neocon, death cult, crystal fascist, zombie brigade, boo! Boo!" Dobson pokes me again and barks, "Silence, heathen! What say you, good people? Shall we kill this sinner?" A huge roar went up. "Yes! Stone him! Stone him!" Dobson raises his hand for quiet and says, "I have a better idea." Then these big guys pick up my cage and lower me into a baptism tank. Dobson screams, "Convert the devil! Convert him!" I say, "Wait, no, I'm underwater for a long time." I start to black out. I see a tunnel and a white light and my dead cat Butch smoking a cigarette. Then they pull me back up, dripping and ghastly, and Dobson says, "What say you now?" I say, "Christo, fascist, zombie." Dobson says, "Then you have chosen your own fate." They open the cage, and I look up and see four hungry lions circling me, and above them, three giant video screens of four hungry lions circling me. I hear an announcer, "When we return on Justice Sunday, the obstructionist liberal gets his just desserts," right after these messages. I woke up, and my bed was filled with Polident. Polident. Hello, Polident. How are you? Polident. To grip those dentures in. Remember those commercials?
Yeah, I do.
It's still on, I think. Didn't they used to have, was that the one where they put the pearls in the glass of, that was something else. What was the fizzy one? Remember where they cook the pearls in the pie? And
yeah,
then they pull
blueberry.
Them out, yeah, and then they pull them out of the pie and drop them in the fizzy stuff? Effordance. Yeah. What was it? You don't remember that? Right?
What are you guys talking about?
We're talking about commercials from back
for
when
old
we,
people,
when
Chris,
we were young.
From like what year?
I don't know, Chris.
70s, 60s?
How old? Don't talk to me like. No, what are you? Maybe 50s. The '70s, no, the '50s. How old do I look? What are you talking about? What?
The Polygrip one they still run. The Polygrip one is where the old one used to be the pencil that they would stick the stuff to and it would stay.
Yeah.
Now the other one is for cleaning.
Right, like cleaning the dentures. That's
cleaning
where they
the
take the pearls and the blueberry stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And the Polydent, didn't they used to put some of it on something like, this is made out of denture material, stick it right up on something else and it would stay like that?
It was a pencil.
Okay.
At first, then they did it with somebody's finger.
Wow, my grandma had dentures.
Really?
Oh, boy, that first time you see those things, whew. You know what I mean?
When they come out.
The first time you remember seeing your grandma without the teeth, or where you see the teeth in the jar, you're like, oh, my God, there's teeth in a cup in there. Boy, my brother and I laughed and laughed and laughed.
Oh,
hey,
my God.
So this is not important.
This is not important.
Well, I mean, it's true. I mean, the dentures in the cup, you know, they're just they're weird looking at first.
No, not quite as weird as somebody with a, you know, like a fake eye.
Oh, yeah. That the first time I met a guy with a face. Oh, my God. Did you?
Yeah. I did.
I worked at a restaurant when I was in high school called the Posh Bagel back in Albuquerque. It was right across from the university. And this guy who used to work at a skate shop next door said he had a fake eye and that he could take it out. And I was like, get out of here. You cannot. I'll bet you an omelet because I cooked the omelets. So I bet him an omelet that he could take. He couldn't take his eye out. And he did.
Really?
And it was, I was like, okay.
I knew a guy that used to pop it out with, like, sound effects.
Oh, yeah, put it back in now.
Right. Please.
Yeah, here's your omelet. Just go sit down over there. Put your eye back in, please. Oh, boy.
Ooh.
Yeah, I remember that. So let's get into this Justice Sunday. You know what just bothers me, aside from the fact that these are, you know, radicals, these are extremists, these are anti-American, anti-constitutional faction within our own country, within the Republican Party. And I started to realize this morning, as you were saying earlier, Riley, is that they know that this is going on. Republican strategists know that this is going on. Bill Frist knew what he was doing. They're trying to, you know, sort of shore up and guarantee and keep this part of the base and expand it as best they can. They don't care that these people are anti-American. They want the schism to be as wide as possible between Republicans and Democrats, between, you know, who their true believers are and who we are.
One thing or the other is going on here, Mark, and it, you know, it doesn't take a political mathematician to figure this out. Either they are gaming these religious right organizations and that they really have no interest in pursuing their agenda, or they really are on board. Again, Ken Mellman, the head of the Republican National Committee, not head of, you know, some radical right group, head of the Republican National Committee, holds weekly strategy sessions with people like Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council, people like James Dobson from Focus on the Family. These are the people that are making these extreme statements, making these extreme judgments about whether or not people are with or without faith, and the Republican Party is in lockstep with them. And we're talking here, folks, about 10 judges out of over 200. We're not talking about for the other 200 judges that the Congress has confirmed. These are not liberals.
But this is also it's about moral issues. It's revolving around the martyrization of Terri Schiavo. It's revolving around reproductive freedom and their horrendous aversion to anybody having the rights over their own reproductive freedom. And it's around what they think is Christian morality that deserves to be, you know, the law of the land. And it's really more that's mobilizing them is these moral issues that they are making so important, because apparently outside of, you know, Janice Rogers Brown and Priscilla Owens, the two that are most recently up for confirmation, these judges that they're making a big stink about are nobodies.
Mm-hmm.
They're political operatives. They're not even, you know, decent judge material. People like Brett Kavanaugh, who has never tried a case, right? But he was part of Ken Starr's impeachment crusade. Against Clinton. You have people like William G. Myers III, who has very little trial experience, but is apparently, done tremendous lobbying against the environment. You know, which is he's being rewarded.
Yeah.
You have people like this guy William Haynes II, who he has very little courtroom experience, but he was a Defense Department counsel. These are favors.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They're not even, they have nothing to do with this religious cause.
Now, look at those, how many of those judges, how many judges do you have there? You have Owen, you have Janice Rogers Brown, and you named, what, three others, right?
Yeah, and that's only the ones I have right here.
Yeah, but see, understand what that means.
That's five.
Yeah.
That's half.
Yeah. The compromise that's being talked about inside the Beltway is drop those five and give us the other five. In other words, split the 10 down the middle. Confirm the five that you didn't mention here and get rid of these five.
But the Christian fascists are mischaracterizing this to get people worked out. They're getting them worked up. Most people only listen to Fox News and only listen to these ministers and these ideologues from the Christian right as the faucets of truth for these people. This is where they get it.
And make no mistake about it, the Christian right is not down with this compromise. This is a legislative compromise. These are people in the Senate talking about this because they know that there's an entirely possible this filibuster thing is not going to go for them.
Well, Chris, let's hear Dobson. James Dobson, this is what he had to say about what we're talking about.
They're unelected and unaccountable and arrogant and imperious and determined to redesign the culture according to their own biases and values, and they're out of control.
They're not out of control, and he's talking about himself. Those are the ones. They're the ones. The Christian right, the fanatical, the crystal fascist zombie brigades that he leads are the ones that want to determine, how this country is governed. They are the radicals. They are the ones that want to support, activist judges to put a theocracy together. The hypocrisy of these people, if they were only speaking about themselves, it would be true.
Well, what James Dobson was just talking about are the members of the United States Supreme Court. These are not radicals. This is the Supreme Court of Rehnquist, the Supreme Court of Clarence Thomas. Anthony Kennedy apparently has gone too far off the farm in order for them to stay with him. But the bottom line is James Dobson is talking about the Supreme Court being out of control.
But they're not elected for a reason. It's so freaks like him can't take power of the damn country. I mean, it's like, I don't know what you got to do to get these people to believe that he's misleading hundreds of thousands of morons into religious retardation and self-justification to usurp the Constitution of the United States of America, and they consider themselves Americans, true Americans. They are extremists, they are anti-American, they are anti-constitutional, and they're being misled by the guy that's barely a reverend. He was he studied developmental psychology for children, and that's how he's talking to his followers, because they are children. They have the emotional capacity of children. All they can just like, oh, look, it's sad, it's bad, it's wrong. All they can care about are like small wads of cells that, they call humans, or people that can't, that are brain dead. What about the people in between? What about all those other people? That's not their concern. They just want to deal with people that are not capable, of...
See, these are folks that are dangerous. And Dobson's not alone. We got some sound of Tony Perkins.
Oh, let's hear that when we come back. You want it, or you want to do it now and then go out?
No,
and Tony?
Let's do it.
All right, 17 past the hour.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
If you pass the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. In just a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Susan Jacoby, the author of Free Thinkers, A History of American Secularism.
There you go.
But first, I know sometimes it's hard to read the headlines. It's going to be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. But fortunately, we have this iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator that helps us translate what's really going on. So let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. From the Associated Press, Bush seeks relief from record oil prices. Bush seeks relief from record oil prices. Translation, Syria grabs ankles, braces for impact. From Fox News, Bill Clinton endorses Tony Blair's re-election. Bill Clinton endorses Tony Blair's re-election. Translation, British Prime Minister hailed for Purdy Mouth. Awful. Just awful. Oh, my God. From Reuters, brother says Pope is forgetful. Brother says Pope is forgetful. Translation,
Newly installed, Pope Benedict the 16th leads crowd of faithful in Passover Seder.
Ooh.
That's better. Good. We got one out of three there. One out of three ain't bad. So as we have been talking for weeks about the meltdown of the separation between church and state and how important that separation is, and just I was reading her book yesterday, and from the very beginning, just you know, how fragile the idea of democracy can be. We're happy to have on our show, she's been on a few times before, Susan Jacoby, who is the author of Free Thinkers, A History of American Secularism. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, I mean, are you finding yourself concerned about this this anti-American extremist bunch that are trying to usurp the judicial branch of the government to impose a theocracy?
Oh, no, I'm not concerned at all. I think that's just great that they want to impose a theocracy. No, seriously, though, it's no accident, although they've been talking about this for a long time, but it's coming right after their debacle in trying to insert themselves into the Terri Schiavo case.
Yes.
Because what happened? They thought if they would order this into the federal courts, they thought because there are so many conservative Republican judges that those judges would just lie down and play dead and go into the Terri Schiavo case again. To their utter astonishment, not only did the judges rebuke them, and most of them were Republican appointed, quite
exactly,
conservative judges, but then the public opinion polls told them that the public was also appalled at this.
Yeah.
Amazingly, about three quarters of the American public doesn't really want to be living on life support because God says so if they can't think or feel or do anything. So it's no accident that this is coming after this, because they realize that it's not just enough to have economically and socially conservative judges. They have to have judges who are appointed who are really enthralled to the right, the religious right. It's one of the reasons they're so furious at poor Anthony Kennedy, who is just a moderate mainstream Catholic, but gee, he actually believes in separation of powers.
Now, this has gone on, but this is not specific to this era. This has gone on since the beginning of this country. Isn't that true?
What?
That there's a constant, there's a tension between the religious elements of the society and the people that are fighting to maintain the constitution.
Well, sure, but let's be clear, though. This is not a tension between the religious elements of this society and secular.
Yes.
It's a tension between a right-wing fanatical religious element, because there were plenty of mainstream religious people last night who were saying, don't include me when you talk about people of faith.
Well, that's what people believe, that the resistance, that the real, that the thing that's going to bring this down is from people with faith who don't believe that there should be a theocracy.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And
okay,
there's always been that split in American religion, too.
Okay. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back with Susan Jacoby. Or am I going out a little too early?
You're going out a little early. But
I'm sorry,
you know,
I got worked up there.
No, but there's some things that we could talk with Susan about. We're going to hear also, let her hear a little bit from the grand poobah of the religious.
Can we play
right?
that right now and then come back with her? Can we
yeah.
play that right now? Number two, Chris, from Bill Frist.
Now, some Republicans, even some conservatives, don't think we should press the issue on requiring votes on judicial nominees. They're concerned that in the future, Republicans won't be able to use this same device to obstruct Democratic nominees. Well, that may be true. But if what Democrats are doing is wrong today, it won't be right for Republicans to do the same thing tomorrow.
So we'll talk to you about that when
yeah.
we come back. We're talking to Susan Jacoby, author of Free Thinkers, A History of American Secularism, and we'll be back with more of her after this. It's 27 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Sarah America Radio's Morning Tradition program. We're talking to Susan Jacoby, the author of Free Thinkers, A History of American Secularism, which is out now in paperback and worth getting. We just heard Bill Frist
talking about how this filibuster is, the filibuster should be gotten rid of because basically he was saying that if they want to use it now, and the argument is, well, what if the other side wants to use it later? He's saying it doesn't matter.
Right. Well, that's really typical of this administration. And by the way, I am not defending the filibuster per se. If a Senate in a calmer mood wants to abolish filibusters later for all time, that's fine. The Senate can make its own rules. But what they are doing here is they just want to abolish the filibuster right this minute to confirm very far-right religious judges, even though most of their right-wing judges have already been confirmed by
exactly.
a spineless Senate. And they'll talk about that tomorrow. You'll hear President Frist, if that's what he wants to be, saying, oh, well, we got to change the filibuster back if there's a Democratic. We got to bring back the filibuster if the Democrats make gains at the midterm elections. But by the way, this is all a fraud. One of the things that is really repellent is these people like Frist are wrapping themselves in the mantle of the civil rights movement and saying the filibuster was used to torpedo civil rights legislation. That's actually right. And a lot of the ancestors of these guys who are trying to abolish it for the religious right today were thrilled to use the filibuster to abolish, you know,
right.
to torpedo civil rights legislation. But thinking what... It's not just the filibuster. The Senate is a very undemocratic institution. If it weren't, we wouldn't have the same number of senators from Montana that we do from New York and California. And it was designed by people like James Madison and John Adams, really to act as a brake upon factions. And right now, if there was ever a faction, it is the far right Christian right. And again, I emphasize, we're not talking about religion. We're talking about a particular kind of religion. And what they are talking about, they talk about thwarting the will of the majority, even by the most expansive public opinion polls.
It's fascist, isn't it?
No, only 25% of the people consider themselves right-wing fundamentalists about. So that is a large minority, but it is still a minority. Why should they be allowed to have judges who represent their religious point of view when the rest of people of religious faith don't agree with them?
But politically, they're trying to put together a movement that is, it seems almost totalitarian to me. I mean, you don't feel that?
Totalitarian, no. It's comparable to a kind of fascism yet. And they have benefited enormously since they are a minority from the fact that religious people, who I think are now beginning to speak out,
mm-hmm.
liberal religious people, have been scared to death of being called anti-religious. And for the first time, I think they may have overstepped and gone beyond what people will accept.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I hear are Protestants and liberal Catholics and liberal Jews speaking out and saying, don't say they're against people of faith. They're against people of your faith. Not my faith. My faith is different, and that's what's needed right now.
Susan Jacoby, what are we to make of the fact that organizations like the Family Research Council, organizations like Focus on the Family, the Federalist Society, and the American Center for Law and Justice, which was founded by Pat
Robertson,
they are having weekly strategy sessions with Ken Mellman, the head of the Republican National Committee. Isn't that a little bit too close? And I'm speaking now not from a moral standpoint, but from a pure political standpoint. Aren't they getting a little too close to these guys, the Republicans?
A little too close. I heard you say earlier that, you know, Ken Mellman, Republican Party, mainstream. What this shows simply is that the Republican Party has sold itself to the religious right. What's very dangerous here is we have an alliance between religious fanatics, and that's what they are. They're not religious. They're a segment of religious fanatics, between religious fanatics and probably interests of very big business who couldn't care less about this kind of religion, but it's a real, you know, devil's bargain here, a Faustian bargain. Republican Party has sold itself to these people. And you know what? I don't know if any of you saw the special about Franklin Roosevelt on the History Channel last week. But what
I wanted to see
a Democrat. It had a clip of a famous speech. He was talking about all of the captains of big business who hated him. And he said, they hate me and I welcome their hatred. That's what I'd like to see a liberal politician standing up saying to Dobson and all those people at Focus on the Family, you right-wing religious fanatics who don't represent most people of faith at all, you hate me and I welcome your hatred, not, ooh, I'm so scared to be called anti-religious. No, they should be speaking up for the kind of religion that they believe in as being opposed to this kind of right-wing fanaticism that these people believe in.
I think that's, I agree with you, and I hope that they're doing that. But you, as you said, you've got friends who aren't willing to speak negatively about it because of fear of them being, you know, of what?
Well, I think that liberals and people who believe in secular values and people of faith who believe in separation of church and state, I'm very encouraged by yesterday some of these people from Protestant and liberal Catholic organizations speaking out, and they're speaking out against the new Pope, too, who's also hand in glove with the fundamentalist Christian right on some of these issues. And I really think, the Schiavo case actually could be a turning point because they misjudged the public on this. And I think what that showed also is something that's the unspoken text in all of this. It's not just embryos they're concerned about. This whole thing about the end of life issue, which the vast majority of the public doesn't agree with them. What it's about is they don't believe that human beings should have the right to control anything about their life and death.
Right.
They stepped into this family feud in the Schiavo case because it offered a perfect opportunity. Fact is, they don't believe in living wills either. They don't believe if I'm 90, 80 years old and I have cancer and I'm of sound mind that I should be able to take an overdose of drugs because I don't want to go on anymore. Why don't they believe it? Because, quote, only God should have the power of life and death. Of course, that doesn't go with their stand on the death penalty. In that case, they get around it by saying, governments derive their power from God, so we're just carrying out God's will and having the death penalty for retarded people and minors and so on.
They can just twist it however they want.
One of the reasons they hate Anthony Kennedy is he's one of the judges who really actually thinks, apparently his religious values tell him that executing minors and the mentally retarded really is wrong.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I mean, they came after him like crazy. But just
that's why they're coming after him.
Yeah,
because they think because he's a Catholic that they can put that kind of pressure on him.
And
they're stupid because, of course, not all Catholics believe that.
So did you call me? You know, one of the things that we don't hear a lot about, and you pointed this out a little bit earlier, is that they're focusing on these 10 judges that have yet to be confirmed and whose nominations have, but they have confirmed 200 others. Now, I'm assuming these people don't have backgrounds in SDS and the Weather Underground. Who are these 200 people?
The 200 people they've confirmed are basically conservative Republicans. And some of them, in fact, are from the far religious right. It's just that what has happened is they've refused to confirm a few of the worst. I mean, in fact, I think the Democrats should have filibustered a lot more judges. Mm-hmm. I think anybody who, for instance, they confirmed a Judge Pickering gave in without a filibuster last time. And this is a judge, a right-wing Catholic, again, not a Catholic, but a right-wing Catholic, who spoke to an organization of Catholic social workers a couple years ago and said, the final union of church and state will come about when Jesus returns at Armageddon. Now, in my view, that disqualifies anybody for being a federal judge in the United States of America.
Yeah, we're talking to Susan Jacoby. Her book, Freethinkers, A History of American Secularism, is available in paperback. We will continue talking to her when we come back. It's 42 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, we're going to land this thing. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's the Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. We're talking to Susan Jacoby, the author of Free Thinkers, A History of American Secularism, that is out in paperback now. We are now going to take a quick call, though. It looks like, Chris, who's this guy? Is he the guy from NAMBLA again? The guy from last week who was in NAMBLA on the phone?
Yeah, he's on line one.
Okay. Okay, hello. Yeah, I remember. Hey, what's up, buddy? How's NAMBLA?
My militant liberal faction is no longer called the North American Mobilized Battalion of Liberal Aggressors. That was a mistake on our part, an honest one. I've never heard of NAMBLA, and I just want to say publicly I do not endorse their man-boy love agenda. But more importantly, do you want to join the revolution?
Yeah, maybe I do, but I really got to know, what you've named your group. I'm a little gun-shy after the NAMBLA thing.
Fine. We are now called the Battalion of Aggressive Liberal-Loving Seditionists.
Okay, so now it's balls. Terrific. What's on your mind?
Dang it, the name is not important. It's what we're doing that's important.
Well, what is it exactly, what you are doing?
Our group...
Balls.
Yes, our group is taking the fight to the conservatives. It is time for war, Mark.
Okay, man, yeah, yeah.
You know what time it is, Mark?
What time is it, brother?
It's revolution time. We are sick and tired of the lies and misinformation spewed by the far-right's attack dog.
Yeah, and the queen of lies and misinformation, Ann Coulter, on the cover of Time magazine. Disgusting. Let's start with her.
Yes.
Let's bring her down.
Yes, Mark.
Let's shut her whole.
Yeah, but do we really have to say whole? Perhaps if we were to use language like we could say pie hole, just so people aren't confused about the word hole. But let's move on that pie hole now, people! No, I'm still not comfortable with pie hole. Let's drop hole as a word in our dialogue. So what have we got left?
Ann Coulter should shut her pie?
Yes! Ann Coulter should shut her pie! Oh, God, no. Lord, Mark, that's worse. We can't say that.
Man, see, you're backing down again.
Well, Mark, hole is a loaded word. It's offensive, and that's not what my group Balls is about. I couldn't possibly expect my family to wear their Balls t-shirts proudly knowing I trafficked in dirty hate speech.
Dude, we're talking about Ann Coulter here. If you don't have the stones to go after her, how can you call yourselves a militant liberal organization?
Oh, we're militant, all right. Ann Coulter and her conservative wolf pack will pay. Pay, I say. We will punish them. As soon as we can all agree on a tactful way to do it, that won't necessarily hurt hers or anyone else's feelings or reflect badly upon us. Let's call a meeting to order and get everybody's input. Get some ideas down on paper. Let it sit for a while. Revisit it. Screen it for offensive language. Draft a mission statement. Let it sit and revisit it again. Run it by a lawyer. Make sure we don't have any legal problems with it. Tweak some of the hot talk, tone it down a bit, and then let them have it!
Okay, man. You know what your problem is? You're pathetic. And you don't really have any intention of hitting the conservatives where it hurts with their own dirty tactics, do you? Do you?
I'm not comfortable speaking unilaterally for the group, Mark. I should really run that by committee. Can I get back to you on that next week?
Oh, God. Yeah, whatever you need, man.
I'm on vacation. Bye.
Okay, I'll be looking forward to check back in with him next week. So, Susan Jacoby, Tom DeLay and these guys, these Christo-fascist zombie brigades, this neocon death cult, they keep saying that this is what the Founding Fathers intended. What does that mean to you?
What it means to me is it's an outright outrageous lie, the
yes.
most outrageous lie of the religious right. It is not what the Founding Fathers intended. If they had intended this, they would have written God into the Constitution and decreed this to be a Christian nation, as many amendments put forth in the last 200 years have tried to do, all of them having been voted down. Instead, what did they do? They wrote a constitution, created the first secular government in the world, a constitution that doesn't mention God. And by the way, to get around that inconvenient fact, which is such a problem for the Christian right, what they explain not mentioning God by saying that, everybody so understood that God was the source of all power that it was superfluous to mention it. But in fact, the omission of God from the Constitution was debated at all of the state ratifying conventions over the Constitution. The theological ancestors of people like Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson predicted that America was going to be crushed to smithereens because they'd left God out. And still, the Constitution was ratified as it is. Now, the religious right lost that first battle. And it's never gotten over it. And this is just a continuation of that battle that they lost right in the beginning, and they've never gotten over it.
That's unbelievable how long these people can hold a grudge.
Yeah, and by the way, a lot of the times they say, oh, the Founding Fathers were deeply religious men. The Founding Fathers had a lot of differing religious beliefs. From very few of them were Orthodox, that is to say right-wing Christians, but many of them believed in God. Many of them believed in the principles of Jesus, as Jefferson did, without believing that Jesus was God or the mm-hmm. Son of God mm-hmm. or that he rose from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Many were deists. But what is far more important than what they believed personally, which is all over the map, as you might expect, is is they didn't want beliefs about God written to the Constitution. And when you think about it, and in a world where secular government had never been tried, and this was mostly a Protestant people at that time, it's remarkable what they did.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Susan Jacoby, one component of the Bush administration's support network is the business community. Now, they are religious people, some of them, but they're certainly not going to let God get in the way of their making money.
Right.
Do you see the evangelical side of his support and the business side of his support, which have been making some noises like they're not really on board all this judicial stuff because it's going to get in the way of, you know, asbestos litigation reform and that sort of thing. Is it possible that the business community is going to get off the bus publicly on this?
You know, I'd like to think so, but I just don't know, because the right wing business community has gotten so much out of the Bush administration, and they can read the map as well as anybody, and they know that without the hardcore support of right wing Christians, Bush would not have been elected. You know, you take away even 5% of that support, and Bush is not president. So I think, you know, they've got the business community, sort of traditional Republican support, has got itself in a pickle. A lot of them couldn't care less about these right-wing religious causes. And if abortion is outlawed in this country, they can fly their daughters and their mistresses to Switzerland and get abortions. So, you know, they don't care about that. But I don't think they're going to get publicly off board with this agenda at all, because if the Republican Party loses the religious right, the Republican Party loses. That's their core constituency now.
How could they possibly, you know, lose the religious right? It seems that even with ethical, you know, transgressions, these people are literally brainwashed to believe in these people. I mean, I find it amazing. I don't know what it would take.
They can't lose the core far religious right. But what they can lose are some people. In every movement, there are some sensible people who are in the middle. They could lose enough of them. I think, for instance, the thing about the Terri Schiavo case, which showed that lots of evangelicals also didn't agree with what Congress
right.
was doing. I think, you know, what I think Democrats should do, what I think liberals should do, is forget about those people who insist that the earth was created in 7 days. They're never going to lose them, the Republicans.
Right.
And go for that portion of the religious right which isn't nuts. And there is a portion.
Okay.
There always is. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Susan Jacoby. Did you hear Democrats? That's Susan
hey,
Jacoby.
Yeah, needless to say, the DNC hasn't called me to be an advisor.
Not yet. It'll happen. Free Thinkers, A History of American Secularism is her book. Go out and get it in paperback. It's a great read. Hang on 1 second. We're going to do this now. This is the Liberal Agenda from the Streisand Compound. Write these down, folks. One, urge Greenpeace to organize radical indigenous Alaskan resistance group to block drilling in Anwar. Suggest the name Eskino. No? Okay. Two, it's spring break. Urge college students to stick it out, to stick it to the man without drinking, taking drugs, or having sex. Go wild, man. Three, send Senate long books to read during filibusters. Moby Dick, some Tom Clancy, and maybe Clinton's autobiography. Four, start internet rumor that surprise twist of the new movie, The Interpreter, is that John Bolton goes on a UN killing spree. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. So Justice Sunday is over. You know, if Hitler had the internet and closed-circuit TV like those evangelicals, we'd be speaking German right now. Wake up, sheeple. You're on the verge of getting canceled. All right, what do we got tomorrow, dude?
All right, man, we got a great week coming up. Melvin Van Peebles, filmmaker extraordinaire, is going to be here. Phil Lesh from The Grateful Dead.
The bass player from The Grateful Dead. That's going to be a riot.
Yep, and the creator of The Family Guy, Seth MacFarlane. All coming up later this week, so you don't want to miss it. Susan Jacoby, thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Maren, great show.
You too. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.